Welcome to another exciting episode of the Chiefs Wire podcast. I'm Ed Easton Jr. On today's episode, Texans Wire managing editor Mark Lane breaks down the Houston Texans ahead of Thursday's matchup. Also on our Chiefs Wire roundtable, Mitch Carney and Talon Graf share their thoughts on the opening night game at Arrowhead Stadium. But first, as always, we start off with Chiefs Wire managing editor Charles Goldman. Okay, Charles, what are your thoughts on the players that didn't make the Chiefs' final 53-man roster?
Yeah, the only one that was really a big surprise, in my opinion at least, was Breland Speaks, former number 46 overall draft pick from 2018. I mean, you obviously don't want to give up on a former top 50 draft pick 3 years after making the selection, but you have to respect Brett Veach for not hanging on to a guy like that in favor of keeping the best players for this football team. So many GMs will just keep a guy because of their draft status and hang on to him for too long before declaring them, you know, a bust or someone that they don't want on their team. And Veach wasn't willing to do that. So, and also, I mean, I think it says a lot that Speaks hasn't received a tryout or anything around the league. I mean, it tells you that maybe there's something more to it, be it whatever happened with the suspension last year, or maybe he's still working back from that knee injury that cost him the 2019 season. Whatever it is, there's more than meets the eye. And as for the other players released, nothing really surprised me there. I mean, obviously, I wanted Jody Fortson to make it. Wanted a couple of other guys to make it, but ultimately they all ended up on the practice squad. Most of the players released ended up back on the practice squad. They're still with the team in some capacity, and I think they'll continue to develop. I think the guys will want to stick around on the practice squad in Kansas City because they saw players who were there in 2019. They ended up getting a Super Bowl ring too. So, you know, everyone's fully bought in into the idea of running it back. And you know, so some of the guys that didn't end up on the 53, they know that they might have an opportunity to play and to contribute in 2020, even if they're on the practice squad.
Do you believe there's a genuine rivalry between Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, I mean, these two players, they're always going to be compared to each other since they came out of the same 2017 draft class. They were taken in the first round and in the top 15 picks there. They play in the same conference, etc., so on and so forth. Do I think a rivalry will reach the heights of, say, the Tom Brady-Peyton Manning rivalry from back in the day? Probably not, and here's why. Brady and Manning met a ton of times because of the same place finisher formula, but there's such parity in the AFC West and the AFC South that Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson might miss each other certain seasons. I mean, a good example would be looking back at the 2018 season where the Texans and Chiefs never played each other, even in the postseason. So you can't really have a true rivalry in the sense without guys who are playing each other regularly. And, you know, these two quarterbacks, they're always going to be connected. But I'm not sure they're going to have a chance to develop a rivalry in the traditional sense.
How much playing time during Thursday's game should we expect to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I wouldn't be surprised if Edwards-Helaire sees 20 or more touches during his debut against the Houston Texans. You look back at Kareem Hunt's debut in 2017, and he had 22 touches. And they trust this kid a lot. They're going to put his full skill set on display early on in his career. I mean, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy have both spoken about it and how they believe he's ready for the spotlight from his time at LSU. I mean, he's ready to go, and they're confident in his abilities. Now, the Texans haven't seen Edwards-Helaire in an NFL game before. Sure, they interviewed him at the NFL scouting combine, did some research on him, watched him at LSU. But they're going to be focused on guys like Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, guys that they've seen before. And that defense is going to work to take those guys away. So it's going to be up to Clyde Edwards-Helaire to kind of keep that Houston defense honest, to say, hey, don't forget about me. I'm a weapon too. And you're going to have to work to take me away as well. So I think we're going to see a healthy dose of Edwards-Helaire in this first game. I think he's going to make his presence known and make his presence felt early on against this Texans defense.
How loud do you expect Arrowhead Stadium to be with limited capacity?
The team is set to play in front of a crowd of nearly 17,000 Chiefs fans. And they have waited a lifetime to see their team raise the championship banner that they're going to be raising on Thursday night. They're probably going to be louder than half the crowds in the NFL are at full capacity. And I don't think there's much more to it than that. I mean, these guys have been waiting for a very long time, and they love Chiefs football. If they're out there in the middle of a pandemic, these are the most diehard fans of the Chiefs kingdom. So I expect them to be loud, proud, and raucous as ever.
And as always, are there any particular stories from Chiefs Wire you would like to highlight from the past week?
Yeah, we have a ton of content previewing the Chiefs-Texans Week 1 matchup, from daily injury reports to just a ton of news coming out of the Texans and Chiefs press conferences each day. For instance, we have a story up on Bill O'Brien talking about the role that former Chiefs safety Eric Murray is set to play for the Texans. He's actually going to be a starter in their defense this year. So that's interesting to look at a former Chiefs draft pick kind of from that perspective. Today, we've got debuts of our Behind Enemy Lines series happening. You'll hear from him later on in this episode, but I interviewed Texans Wire editor Mark Lane to get the scoop on their team ahead of Week 1. We'll have our weekly scouting report from Talon Graf. That's going to debut. Our predictions from the entire staff here at Chiefs Wire are going to be up. So, I mean, it's really great to just get back into the swing of things for the season. And gosh, we appreciate you guys so much for tuning in and reading the website. Go Chiefs!
For more information on this story and others, head over to ChiefsWire.com and we'll give you all the details you need on the Kansas City Chiefs. Coming up next, the Chiefs Wire Podcast Roundtable. Chiefs Wire Podcast, we are back, and it's that time again. It is time for the Chiefs Wire Roundtable. I got Mitch Carney, I got Talon Graf. Guys, it's officially game week. We now have a live NFL game to talk about. It's been so many months, it's been so many lists and, you know, all-time great this and all these different opinion pieces that we've done on the show. Now we can get right into a game. I'm excited. This is a great time. Let me just get you, just gauge where you guys are with everything. Mitch, how are you feeling right now?
Oh, I'm feeling good. I'm ready to go. You know, with no preseason, I kind of didn't feel like the season was here yet. But, you know, just, you know, with it just being 2 days away or 2 days from whenever we're recording this, I'm ready to go. I'm excited. It feels like football season's finally here, and I'm kind of getting pumped up now. I'm ready to see some football.
Yeah, man, for sure. It seems fitting that the last season ended with the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl, and now, you know, without preseason, as Mitch said, now we get to kick off the next NFL season with the Chiefs hosting a premier, you know, primetime game on Thursday night. It's pretty great. And, you know, seeing these few college games that have been playing, yeah, I'm geared up for the NFL.
Definitely. It's like I said, it's been such a long wait, so much uncertainty into the season, whether or not we're going to have a season altogether, where we're going to have fans. We are going to have fans in the stands, may not be full capacity at Arrowhead Stadium, but it will be pretty loud. I'm hoping it's going to be pretty loud in there. Chiefs Kingdom never lets the team down. I expect it to be a pretty wild atmosphere. What do you guys think?
Oh, I would expect so. I mean, just the everything we've already mentioned, just the waiting and the fact that, you know, the Chiefs are coming off of a Super Bowl win. It's whoever is there, they're going to be very, very loud, and as loud as they can be.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with limited fans there, but I feel like they'll still make somewhat of an impact. And I think, you know, just, you know, they may not be the loudest, you know, that Arrowhead's been a long time, but I still think, you know, just them being there and seeing the banner being raised and everything, and just seeing the Chiefs, you know, for the first time in months, first, like, real sports besides the NBA, it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be really fun. I'm really excited that, you know, the Chiefs are able to have some fans there.
Definitely. And let's just jump right into it.
the very first opponent on the Chiefs schedule we've all known for the last couple of months now, the Houston Texans. Obviously, the Texans were in the playoffs last year, knocked out by the Chiefs in that infamous divisional round where we had the amazing play by the amazing play from obviously both sides of the ball in the second half with the Chiefs, especially the end of the first half with Patrick Mahomes and the is there a special name for the run yet? Has anybody coined a special name for it yet?
I haven't heard one. I think you're on the spot, Ed.
Well, I guess we'll make up one. I don't know. We're just going to call it the Mahomes marathon run. It seemed like it took forever, but he eventually got to that. He eventually scored a touchdown. So we had that moment. This is a new Houston Texans team. They do not have DeAndre Hopkins, who just signed a huge deal with the Arizona Cardinals after being traded there. I got to start off with you guys. When you see this team now on paper, not having DeAndre Hopkins, still having Deshaun Watson, having a new wide receiver core, are you impressed by anything you see there on offense? Mitch, I'm going to start with you first.
I'm not really for sure what I see here on the offensive side. Of course, Deshaun Watson is one of the top quarterbacks in the league. If it wasn't for Mahomes, he definitely would be like one of the up and coming, like one of the best quarterbacks, you know, coming out of the AFC right there with Lamar Jackson, just a really good young quarterback. But trading DeAndre Hopkins was a little bit of a head scratcher for me, especially since all they got was David Johnson out of that. They did replace Hopkins with Brandon Cooks, who I do think is a really good receiver, but I'm going to take DeAndre Hopkins every time. But, I'll give Bill O'Brien a little bit of credit here. Even though everybody likes to make fun of Bill O'Brien a little bit, I do think he's a good coach. I do think he's like, you know, he knows what he's doing for the most part, I feel like. So there's got to be a reason why he got David Johnson. Maybe he thought, you know, with the Chiefs, you know, struggling to defend the run throughout all last season, he really wanted to get a good running back. And maybe he plans to run over the Chiefs this Thursday with David Johnson. David Johnson can also help out in the passing game. We've seen him catch passes. But him and Deshaun Watson and also Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb, Will Fuller, these are all players to keep an eye on for this Thursday. I do think they are able to do some things offensively, mostly just because of how good Deshaun Watson is. But offensively, they don't really scare me against what we have on defense, because I think we got playmakers all over the field, and I think we'll be able to contain them pretty well.
Yeah, the Hopkins trade, I mean, on paper, it is definitely head-tilting. They got a couple draft picks in it, but – yeah, the fact that, I mean, now that Deshaun Watson is signed to a you know, extension, and that's where the money went, you know, I kind of got to not really say I understand it, because Hopkins is an elite receiver and you just don't find those very often. But when's the last time a Super Bowl winning team was like, well, we got here because of our wide receiver? You know, it's so I kind of understand you want to pay Watson. You want to make sure he's locked up. You want to make sure you have a franchise quarterback, which really for Houston – this is their first one. They've kind of cycled through guys. They had, you know, at their inauguration, they had David Carr. They wanted to lock in their first ever really franchise quarterback, which I get that. And, you know, they got a running back who doesn't have a lot of years under his belt. You know, he's really struggled the past couple of years. He was just shy of 1,000 yards a couple of years ago. At one point, he wasn't all pro. Like, he had 16 touchdowns in a few years ago. So, who knows what David Johnson has in the tank? And we've seen it before, where a guy comes to a new location, and all of a sudden, he's just like, oh, he's still got it. So, and with the job that the front office did in kind of rebuilding an offensive line, primarily in the 2019 draft with Max Sharping and Titus Howard, who are both now staple starters along the offensive line at guard and tackle, respectively. And with Laramie Tunsil in that trade, and they have a solid center in Nick Martin, and then a former Chief, Zach Fulton. It's pretty remarkable what they were able to do in rebuilding an offensive line so quickly, because at one point that offensive line was like, they're never going to win, and Deshaun Watson will never be able to, you know, stay healthy behind that offensive line. Well, now all of a sudden it's like, well, they have a solid line from tackle to tackle. So I think with that new offensive line and the growth they have there with the new running back, I think they're looking to kind of, yeah, maybe ground and pound a little bit more, use play action to set up those speedsters to blow the top off the defense. You know, DeAndre Hopkins was never really an elite speedster. He was always a possession guy, a 10 to 15 yard guy. But now you got Will Fuller, Randall Cobb's a speedster, Brandon Cooks is a speedster. And then you got Kenny Stills to kind of step into that first down role. So I think that was the plan. And if you look at their how their offseason gone in the past couple of years, it kind of makes sense. But, yeah, the way their offense is going to look in 2020, I think is going to be quite a bit different than what people are used to.
Well, I definitely agree with that. I just feel like when they were trying to put this team together, they went more for quantity over quality, in a sense, with the wide receiver core. The guys, like, you got a core of Brandon Cooks, Will Fuller, Kenny Stills, Randall Cobb. These are all they're all good receivers, you know. There isn't really that elite receiver anymore where you know it's going to go to that guy. That's kind of like what DeAndre Hopkins is in the NFL, and you kind of take that away. You're putting a lot more pressure, I feel like, on Deshaun Watson to see if he can find different receivers. Can he mesh with each guy? Can he be that type of quarterback that can just find the open man no matter who it is? You know, there isn't just that automatic go-to guy anymore. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see how he's going to balance that, as well as having David Johnson, if David Johnson stays healthy, because that's pretty much been his biggest issue. Speaking of staying healthy, if we're going to talk about the Texans, you got to talk about J.J. Watt. His big issue has been staying on the field over the last couple seasons. He's still an elite pass rusher, but do you guys feel like he is much of a factor in this game, or even in this season for that matter? Mitch, I'm going to go with you on that one.
Yeah, I think he is definitely going to play a big factor, especially week one against the Chiefs. You know, without any preseason games, our offensive linemen haven't had a lot of practice against other teams. I know we have Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, who, you know, are definitely our tackles, and they're going to be good no matter what. But the interior is what I'm really worried about. We have Kelechi and Andrew Wiley at the guard positions, who we haven't seen a whole lot. We didn't see much of Wiley last season, and, you know, Kelechi being a new player. I'm afraid that J.J. Watt might be able to cause some problems against the Chiefs. You know, if they're able to get to Patrick Mahomes, that's definitely going to be a problem. We're not going to be able to do much offensively. But I do think that, you know, we are going to be able to do enough to stop him, along with Whitney Mercilius. I think I'm saying that right. But either way, I think our interior offensive line may struggle a little bit, especially early, just because they haven't had that reps against other teams, you know, because they missed the preseason. You know, J.J. Watt is definitely going to play a big factor into this game, and I can see him maybe getting a sack or two pretty early on.
Yeah, and J.J. Watt, as long as he's on the field, he's going to be an issue. You know, every single year that he's played a full season, he's been an all-pro. It just, like you alluded to, it just hadn't happened a lot recently. Yeah, if he's there, you have to account for him. And then that's going to open this stuff up for those edge rushers that, you know, Merciless and that the young kid, well, not really young, but kind of the guy that's kind of been groomed, and now it seems like he's finally getting his chance in Brennan Scarlett. He's improved every year, and he's grown every year, earned more playing time every year. So this might be a little bit of a coming out party for Scarlett. And then you got the rookie Greener. I know he's on the injury report, but, you know, you have a rotation of these pass rushers, and to go along with that interior of the defense with Cunningham and McKinney, two very solid linebackers right there to snuff out the run. Yeah, the front seven is going to be an issue. And then opposite of J.J. Watt, you have the guy from Texas who was a rookie last year, Ominihu. He's going to be an issue. He's a very long, athletic guy, and I think our tackles are going to have an issue. And along with our guards, I think our offensive line is just going to be in for a busy day. There's a lot of names to account for on that defense, and they have some solid depth. And I just think we're going to have a really good game plan. And it's funny because we're mentioning all these defensive guys for the Texans, but, you know, I think sometimes we do forget. It's like, yeah, the Chiefs have a really good offense, and an offense that really is just almost impossible to stop. So unless, you know, and with the new defensive coordinator, Anthony Weaver, coming in, unless he has just a solid all-around game plan and his guys are, you know, play almost perfectly, the Chiefs are going to – they're going to put up 28. I mean, you can almost just, you know, guarantee that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think when you look at the way the Texans are set up on defense, a lot of it goes into that defensive line and the power they can have. It will really be up to the Chiefs' offensive line to kind of maintain a stance there and make sure there's some protection for Mahomes, make sure he has time to get rid of the football. Because I feel like if you go the wide receiver core, including Kelce, against the secondary of the Texans, that's a win every time for the Chiefs. So Just the way they have it set up, it should be an interesting matchup in regards to how the Texans are going to be able to hold up. Will there be a lot more blitzes? Will it not be? You know, I'm interested to see what type of formations they're willing to set up in the first half, most importantly, because like I said, like you guys were just saying, there hasn't been a preseason. There's going to be some rust. Who's going to look, you know, the sharpest? That's really what's going to come down to when it comes to the first couple of weeks in the season for each team. So it should be a pretty interesting battle. And another battle that everyone should be talking about is the coaching battle. And you mentioned earlier, Mitch, about O'Brien, and you feel like he doesn't really get enough credit for some of the work that he does do. What is something about O'Brien that stands out to you?
I mean, I know it's the AFC South and it's pretty weak, but it's hard to win games in the NFL no matter what. He's won the AFC South 4 out of the last 5 years. So he's a talented coach. I don't agree with everything he does, but he does have success in the NFL. So I don't think you should ever count anybody out. I do think he has given Andy Reid fits before. We saw early last season. I think it was the Chiefs' second loss of the season. I mean, it looked like the Chiefs didn't really have an answer for Bill O'Brien and the Texans. So it'll be interesting to see how well Bill O'Brien does against Andy Reid to begin the season, where, you know, Andy Reid always has a fantastic start. And then including their coaching staff, Andy Reid's got a much better staff. We have Eric Bieniemy, who should be an NFL coach right now. Then we also have Steve Spagnuolo on the defensive side, who was a former NFL coach and is probably one of the best defensive coordinators in the league, in my opinion. So that staff all together is just really well, really good compared to the Texans, who have a brand new offensive coordinator, and a brand new defensive coordinator. They both were Texans, so they've been a part of that team for a while. But just look at what the Chiefs have. If you look at the resume that he's have with their coaches, it just beats the Texans by a mile.
Yeah, as Mitch was alluding to, it's just a very young staff for the Texans. You got a second-year coordinator on the offense. You got a first-year coordinator on the defense. They retained Romeo Crennel, who's obviously a very seasoned guy who's been around, you know, primarily. He learned a lot from Bill Belichick. He spent time with the Kansas City Chiefs, and now he's been with the Houston Texans for a while. So you have those veteran guys that they're just not at the forefront anymore. So it's kind of like they're passing off the buck and passing the baton to the new era of coaches and the new wave of coaches. And this is a good first test, man, especially for the defense. You know, you're going to be tested early with the defending Super Bowl champion. You got the best offense in the league. You know, what do you bring into the table? Do you have you guys ready? It's going to be a good battle, good test for them on the Texans side. But yeah, the Chiefs, I mean, not losing any coaches on their staff, and just the veteran leadership they have with Andy Reid is probably one of the best, not named Bill Belichick. Yeah, I mean, the advantage is Kansas City Chiefs from top to bottom when it comes to the coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's kind of a sweep there. You know, obviously you're going to see a lot of sweeps in regards to the Chiefs coaching staff compared to other coaching staffs just by, you know, the experience and things that they have brought to the table already. So that's not really a surprise to anyone. But let's actually take a flip now to the Chiefs side of the ball, and let's make some goals here for the offense. What do you feel like is the offensive goals that Andy Reid and company should really be aiming for when it comes to, like, maybe the first half or second half? What are the things on offense they really want to do? Talon, I'm going to come right back to you on this one. What is the immediate goals on offense for the Chiefs?
Yeah, well, looking at the last time the Chiefs and the Texans played, and really just how the Chiefs started every single playoff game, including the Super Bowl, you want to come out crisper, you want to come out cleaner, and fewer mistakes, and you don't want any three and outs to start the game. When you look at the way the Chiefs started the game against the Texans, a lot of miscues, there was just a lot of mistakes, not all on offense, but you did have, you know, punting situations. You had a punt that got blocked, and then you had Tyreek Hill muff a punt. So if I'm Andy Reid, I'm preaching clean up the mistakes, play the way we're supposed to play, and there's no excuses. So, and another thing is I want to spread the ball around a little bit more. When you look at the offensive production the last time they played, it was a Travis Kelce show. You know, without Travis Kelce, who knows how that game goes? You know, 3 touchdowns, over 130 yards, 10 receptions, and the next guy in the receptions list was Tyreek Hill with 3. So you want to have your offense more balanced, especially in the passing game. You want to kind of spread the wealth around. You don't want one guy leading the stat sheet unless this is just absolutely just his day. And then, you know, feed Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Get his feet wet. Get him, you know, NFL ready. Let's kind of, you know, trial by fire, because you got Darrell Williams sitting in the wings. You got some depth there to kind of ease Clyde Edwards in it. And if Clyde is struggling early, then just go to Mahomes. You know, I mean, you're not going to feed Edwards-Helaire the entire first drive, but you do want to get him acclimated, get him up to speed. But yeah, just kind of spread it around and clean up the mistakes from last time.
Yeah, I agree with you with the wanting to get it like a fast start. You know, it's a start to things the way we're supposed to. You know, let's play clean football. You know, I don't think if the Chiefs allow the Texans to get another 24-0 lead, I don't think we'll come back from that. I don't think the Texans are going to make the same mistakes that they did in the playoffs, and they're going to keep the Chiefs out of that game if there's any type of lead they get. So the Chiefs definitely need to come out and score fast. But I am expecting a little bit of rust in this offense just because there's been no preseason. You know, things were a little different in training camp. So I am expecting a little bit of rust to start the game, but I'm expecting them to, you know, maybe once that second quarter hits, be like, okay, get this engine rolling. Now let's play football the way we need to play football and, you know, score and be one of the best offenses in the league because we know we're that good. I disagree a little bit with you on the Clyde Edwards-Helaire thing. I want them to give him the ball every chance they get. Of course, you know, you want to, you know, make sure Hill and Kelsey get theirs, but with this just being Clyde Edwards-Helaire's first game and him not really having any experience at all, because like I said, there's no preseason games, and that's super important for a rookie. I want him to get acclimated really, really fast, get him going really early, kind of like what they did with Kareem Hunt back in 2017. If they get him the ball and get him confident, there's no telling what he can do this season. So I really hope that they get him involved early and often.
No, I could definitely see that, especially with looking at the way they start games in regards to the offense. It does take a while, it appears, especially that game against the Texans, the divisional round game. The offense wasn't clicking immediately. You know, you wanted to make sure that you're able to match the firepower that the Texans were throwing at them to start the game. It is important to jump ahead. And as weird as it may sound, especially with how explosive Mahomes and all the different weapons are in offense, it is possible to have a bit of a lag coming off of no preseason. You're playing in a very unusual kind of situation. We still don't know what an NFL game looks like in a COVID-19 era. So we don't know how much, like, difference. Is it going to be a different pace? We don't know these things yet. And you're heading into a brand new season, national televised game. There's bound to be plenty of turnovers in this game. I'm just putting it out there now on both sides of the ball. So that's something I guess they have to keep in mind, just maybe keeping the ball safe and limit the turnovers at all costs, because that's going to be a big deal for the first couple of weeks for every team in the NFL. Now, we flip on to the other side of the ball with the defense. Obviously, the defense made great strides towards the end of last season. What do you feel like are the immediate goals in this game for the Chiefs defense? Mitch, I'm going to start off with you.
So I believe the obvious thing is, you know, containing and, you know, putting pressure on Watson, because he is the engine that makes their offense run. But I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, don't allow David Johnson to take over. We saw time and time again last year, we saw running backs just take over against the Chiefs defense and rush for over 150 yards and multiple touchdowns. So there's a reason that Bill O'Brien traded for David Johnson, I believe. So if he comes out and, you know, rushes for 150 plus yards and has two or three touchdowns, you know, and is able to contribute in the passing game, the Chiefs could be in trouble very fast. So I want to make sure that we don't allow him to take over. Just kind of make sure that, you know, our run game is up to where it needs to be, and maybe make sure he doesn't contribute in the passing game very much. You know, kind of let Deshaun Watson, well, don't let Deshaun Watson, because if you let Deshaun Watson do what he wants, he's going to win this game. But, you know, David Johnson's got to be a key player that we make sure doesn't take over this game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very solid point. The Chiefs definitely have struggled in the running game the past year or two. So, yeah, you definitely want to look at when you got a name like David Johnson in the backfield and the rebuild offensive line. And I agree with you there. I think that should be the number one priority. But, you know, especially with – and we spoke about it – with that DeAndre Hopkins, Houston has to find a new number one. And Brandon Cooks has been dealing with a quad injury, so it's not even guaranteed that he's going to be out there. So you're looking at, you know, Fuller, Stills, Cobb, who's going to step up? So, yeah, you definitely want to kind of stack the box, force the game into Deshaun Watson's hand, because he doesn't have a safety blanket anymore. It's just not there. And I'm speaking of Hopkins, you know, obviously. And so you want to force Deshaun Watson. How good is he? Does he earn his contract? You know, it's the first live game. Let's get after Watson. Let's kind of rattle him, shore up the run defense, and then force the game into Deshaun Watson's hand, because I just don't know, especially with Hopkins gone and if Cook's in there, there's just not a lot of weapons on the exterior of that offense. So and I trust the secondary enough to stop those names that we mentioned. So yeah, let's see if Deshaun Watson is prepared for this primetime game without his number one go to that he's had his entire career. All of a sudden he's gone. So let's test Deshaun Watson early.
I definitely agree with that. You have to have pressure on Deshaun Watson, and he's everything for that team on offense. You want to make sure he's as uncomfortable as possible. The defensive line of the Chiefs, you know, we put the money's in the money's been put into that defensive line. You want to see some type of results, especially in a game like this. You want to see guys really get after him and make him as uncomfortable as possible. But going back to your point, Mitch, about the running game, the Chiefs did have a lot of issues just stopping the run. We don't know what David Johnson has left, but to have a big game where you can limit a guy like that to maybe, I don't know, around 50 or so yards or even less than that would go a long way in changing the whole dynamic of how you look at the Chiefs in terms of stopping the run. The linebacking core is going to have to be big. That's something that we're going to see. Maybe a little Willie Gay Jr. Could this be a great starting point for him to see how he plays in the run game? And there's all these different things that are needed to be done. But for me, that's a big goal, is stopping the run. And, yes, putting pressure on Watson. I agree completely with what you guys were just saying. Now, the last thing in regards to the Chiefs, strategy. Andy Reid, obviously a mastermind on offense and the different setups that he has. What do you feel like is the strategy just for beating the Texans overall? Talent, I'm going to come to you on this one. What is the coaching strategy and mindset heading into this game?
For me, it would be catch them off guard. And that means go to Mecole Hardman early and often. You know, when you look at the tape, Tyreek Hill, you know what he's going to do. Travis Kelce obviously had a big game against the Texans last year. Mecole Hardman was a big-time special teams contributor against the Texans, but he hadn't really been a guy in the receiving corps, in the receiving room. He hadn't been a guy yet. So if you're the Texans, without preseason, all you can really go on is what have they done in the past and what may they do. So you have to account for Hill. You have to account for Kelce. You have to account for Watkins. And obviously, with all the publicity and the first-round status of Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, they're going to try to be prepared for that too. So if I'm Andy Reid, who's the X factor? It's Mecole Hardman. And with the banged-up secondary that the Texans are sporting, man, go to him. Feed him the ball. Get him in open space on screens. You know, get double moves and get him to blow the top off with his speed. And that's my go-to plan if I'm Andy Reid, is just get it to Mecole Hardman and let him do his thing.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of go with the same thing, but flip it a little bit. I want the Chiefs to be super aggressive. I don't want the Texans to catch the Chiefs with their pants around their ankles, because, you know, they're going to celebrate the Super Bowl win that night. They're going to raise the banner. And I don't think the Chiefs really have a Super Bowl hangover, because, you know, they didn't really get a chance to have a celebration this offseason because of COVID. And I don't think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes would allow them to do that. But, you know, I need them to come out aggressive. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Andy Reid called some pretty big plays, recently, you know, some pass plays where, you know, Mahomes throws the ball 20 or 30 yards down the field, just because he doesn't want the team to, you know, be content with where they're at. So I want the Chiefs to be super aggressive. I kind of hope they give Clyde the ball a lot. I want to see him make some plays. I talked about him earlier. I think he can make a really big difference in this game against the Texans linebackers, it's through the running game or the passing game. So that's all I want to see from the Chiefs from the strategy.
I definitely agree. It's just about making sure you're able to maintain, because let's be honest, we know the Texans are going to come out doing whatever they can to just try to ruin the night for the Chiefs. You're going to see a lot of different offensive play sets that they probably didn't see in the games last year because of the new personnel. You just want to maintain and make sure that you can, in my opinion, the defense of the Chiefs need to be the biggest focus in regards to strategy, and just continuing to just keep Deshaun Watson off balance. You don't want them to get into any type of groove, because once that starts to happen, you run into the same issues as last year, and you're not always going to get those miracle comebacks. So I just feel like this Chiefs team has to know, like, you have to jump on opponents. You got to show how dominant you are early. You can't just turn it on later in games. So that, I think, needs to be the mindset moving forward. All right, guys. So now we're at the end right here. What do you feel like is the biggest takeaway from the last meeting? And obviously we're talking about the divisional playoff game. Mitch, quickly, what do you have?
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up. What was that?
Oh, what was the biggest takeaway from last year's game, the divisional playoff game?
Is that the Chiefs are never out of it. I know the Texans have talent on, all over the field, but I think as long as, the Chiefs stay composed, they're always going to be in this game. I think they're always going to be able to compete with the Texans. Mahomes is a great player. Even if he's down 24, there's always going to be a chance. So even if the Chiefs have a pretty rusty start and say they get down by double digits early on, it's not count them out yet. They still have plenty of time. As long as there's time on the clock, the Chiefs will still have a chance to win it.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think that's spot on. With Patrick Mahomes, there's just never a chance that the Chiefs are, there's never a guaranteed loss for the Chiefs, no matter how down you are. So I think, just looking at the last game they played, it's just no matter what is going on in the field, Patrick Mahomes and the offense can make up for it.
No, I definitely agree with that. We saw, like I said, an amazing game, amazing comeback that they're forever going to talk about in regards to the Chiefs' history and leading to a Super Bowl along the way. But just having that focus and making sure not to give up. And I think that was the biggest takeaway, and we could all agree on that from the divisional playoff win, carrying that over into the new season. Okay, guys, time to have your player of the game predictions. Well, obviously, we're going into our crystal ball here. Who will be the player of the game? You can only choose one. It can be an offensive player or a defensive player. Mitch, who do you have?
I think the easy answer would be Patrick Mahomes, but since I've been talking so highly of him all offseason, I'm going to go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I've been talking about how I think they should get Clyde the ball early and often in this game, so I'm going to go with him. I think he's going to have over 150 yards from scrimmage, a couple touchdowns hopefully, and just really shock the world. And this will be the first game of his offensive rookie of the year campaign.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all. Mitch has been he loves some CEH, and I would love to see that out of CEH. But for me, the guy I mentioned earlier, I'm going to go Mecole Hardman. I would love to see Mecole Hardman have a breakout season, and I would love for his breakout season to start against the Texans. And eventually DeMarcus Robinson is going to be gone, and Sammy Watkins is going to be gone. And I think this is going to be an offense that's really driven by Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman. So I really want to see Mecole Hardman break the century mark. I want to see him get, maybe even a 150 in receiving yards, get a big play, where he breaks maybe like a 70, 60-yard catch and get in the end zone a few times. So I really want to see Mecole Hardman break through, and I think he's going to be the player of the game.
Okay, I could definitely see that. I'm actually going to go ahead and – no, I'm going to put out a defensive player. I'm going to go with Chris Jones. I think he has a big game. I feel like he's going to really get to Watson and establish the defensive line in regards to how strong they are. He finally got paid. I just feel like there's going to be a little more incentive there to go after Watson, especially nationally televised game. It's all in the stars right there for me. So I feel like he's going to have a huge game and really lead the Chiefs to victory. Okay, guys, here's the part. We're getting to this is the final part right here. What are your score predictions? I'm assuming you guys all have the Chiefs winning here.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, let's get the final scores. Mitch, what's the score?
I think this is going to be a ball game throughout the majority of the game. But I think in the fourth quarter, the Chiefs definitely pull away, maybe get a late touchdown or two. So I'm going with the Chiefs win 34-20.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think that it's going to be I think the Texans are going to struggle. I think they're going to kind of look like chickens with their head cut off, head cuts, Did I say that correctly? Yeah, it doesn't matter. It sounded good. But anyway, yeah, with the new coordinators, it's just, I think no preseason. This is the first live action. I think they're just going to struggle a lot. And with the Chiefs retaining almost everybody, including the coaching staff, I think they're just going to kind of be in control. But the Texans will put up a few points. I think it's going to be 31-20.
Okay, I think we're all along the same line right there. I feel like the Texans are going to jump out and score some points. And the defense for the Chiefs are actually going to start waking up a little bit towards the second quarter. But I do give the Texans, I'm going to spot them some points, but I feel like Mahomes and company will be too much. So I got 35-21 Chiefs. So we're kind of all in the same area with the score there.
I think that's a good omen.
That's never a bad thing. It's definitely never a bad thing. And just a reminder to everybody, go make sure you check out the Chiefs Wire website. We're going to be it's going to be actually all of our predictions, as well as everyone else that contributes to the site. So you can, you know, follow with us and see our record at the end of the year. Do you guys remember your records from last year? Mitch, do you remember yours?
Oh, I think I missed out on 2 games, so I would have been 17-2.
Wow. 17-2, okay.
I would have been 16-3 because I thought we would have beat the Texans. I mean, we would have beat the Titans the first time.
That's impressive. I don't remember mine. I think that probably tells you how well I did.
You know, I don't remember mine. I know I was in double digits. I know that much, but now I'm just shy to say mine since Mitch, you know, had like probably one of the greatest years of all time in pick. So I'm actually going to just start calling you and ask who to pick. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm just going to wait until he writes his, and I'll just mimic mine and change it by a couple points.
The only game I thought we were going to lose was the one against the Packers when Matt Moore started. So, I just had it down, I guess. I just know my stuff.
And he knows somebody or he knows something we don't. That's all I can say right there. But it's fair. Once again, guys, Thursday night, if you're listening, the time this is published, that's tonight. You got the Chiefs. We got the Texans. It's prime time. It's on NBC nationally, wherever you are. Guys, looking forward to a great game. Hopefully we're talking about a Chiefs win this time next week.
Yeah, go Chiefs, baby.
What's going on, Chiefs Kingdom? Welcome to the Chiefs Wire podcast. Charles Goldman here, managing editor of the Chiefs Wire. Today, I have a special guest with me. We have Brett Eskina here, the co-owner of Breakthrough Sports and Performance and Personal Training in Columbia, Missouri. Now, why am I talking to Brett here today? Why is he joining us today? He's here to talk about the surprise of the 2020 NFL season, who made the Chiefs 53-man roster, and that would be Tershawn Turk Wharton. Welcome to our show, Brett. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Charles. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing today?
You know, not bad. I'm happy to have you here. You kind of really put me on to Tershawn here, and I know I've been kind of like leading the charge on him making the 53-man roster for a while now. But first, before we get into that, tell me a bit about Breakthrough Sports, what you guys do, what you're all about. And then kind of secondly, how did you first link up with Tershawn, and how long have you been training?
Yeah, great question. So Breakthrough Sports Performance, we're, as you mentioned before, based out of here in Columbia, Missouri. We were started in 2014. My childhood best friend growing up, Kyle Yeagley, is the person who founded Breakthrough Sports Performance. And the end of 2015 is when I moved down to help him kind of run it and kind of grow it from there. And so we are a predominantly sports performance gym. There's some around in Kansas City that are similar, but I'd say 95% to 99% of the clients that we work with are athletes. You know, a lot of middle school and a lot of high school kids, but we have, you know, we've got a ton of college athletes. We've worked with a couple guys that have made practice squads before. You know, we worked with some overseas basketball guys. So it's ranging really from little league sports all the way to professional sports. And what was your second question? Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. Tershawn, I mean, how do you guys link up and how long have you been training?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of funny. I got a random text from, I'll refer to him as Turk just because that's how I know him as. But I got a random text from Turk one day. You know, this was in, I think, May or June of 2018. I tried to go back and look through it, but it was on my old phone, so I don't have the original one. But yeah, it was in 2018. He reached out to us. He heard about us through a teammate or a friend of his. And he just reached out. He said, you know, hi, Mr. Brett. My name's Turk. I got your number. And, you know, I'm a player at Missouri S&T, and I'm interested in training with you. I didn't really know, because when he reached out to us was after his sophomore season. And he was, I believe, second in Division II in sacks that year. So we didn't really know about him. He didn't really say, you know, hey, I'm a stud here at Missouri S&T. He was pretty humble about it. I didn't really learn about that until doing my own research on him.
Yeah. Now, I want to take Chiefs fans kind of through how you and I linked up a little bit, you know, over Tershawn here. I think it was back when I ran my undrafted free agent spotlight on Turk. And, I mean, the first thing that pops out, like you said there, is Missouri S&T. He had, I believe it's 58 tackles for loss, 35 and a half sacks, 11 forced fumbles over the course of four seasons. I mean, the numbers are just, your jaw kind of drops a bit. You're like, whoa. But anyhow, the Chiefs website had him listed at, I think it was 6'4" and 255 pounds. So I had that in my article, and you had commented on the article, like, hold up, that's not right. So you sent over the correct height and weight and some videos of Turk, and hey, I was like, whoa, this is kind of a bit more impressive than I thought. Like, this is a different player than I thought. And, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that think he's a pure edge guy because of his stats over there on the Chiefs website. But why don't you set the record straight a little bit and inform people exactly what the Chiefs are getting in Turk from a physical standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. The stats and the measurables that the Chiefs, and I think the Chiefs pulled that directly from Missouri S&T's website. Yeah. So I think that's where the original 6'4", 255 came from. Now, I think most people on rosters are going to give their athletes an inch or two. I just think that's pretty common. Turk is probably 6'2 to 6'3. I'm just a hair under 5'10. So to me, he's tall, but he's definitely not 6'4". But when he came to us in 2018, he did weigh about 255 pounds. So when we got him, he was, 30 or 35 pounds lighter than what he is currently. Turk is a very genetically gifted individual. Some people struggle to gain weight. Some people can put it on easily. And it was him. It seems like any pound that he put on, the majority of that pound was muscle. He's just very genetically gifted. So yeah, he came to us about 255 pounds. And then currently today, like I said, between 6'2 and 6'3, and right at, I think last I talked to him, he was hovering about 285 pounds. It was kind of funny because when he was in on all virtual camp, he was still working out with us and just having his team meetings and everything. And the coach would constantly ask him, I don't know which coach it was, but would ask him what he was weighing. And he got up to about 292 or 293. And the coach said, whoa, let's tone that back a bit. But this was even before anybody had ever met him. So a 295 on Turk is a lot different than a 295 on a regular person. Just with how physically gifted he is and putting on muscle instead of, you know, unwanted weight. So you hear a lot of guys put on weight in the off season, and you never know if it's going to be good weight or bad weight. But with him, 95% of the time it's going to be good weight.
Great. You know, when you told me about the types of testing numbers that he put up, the drills that he would have done at the combine were he to be invited, I kind of doubted you a bit. I'm like, that's really impressive. I don't know about that. But then I started seeing and hearing some things about him out of training camp when he first got in the building. And the first thing you pointed out, they were doing like a shuttle run type drill, and the Chiefs had like a video mashup of it up on their social media. And Turk was right out in front of all the starting defensive linemen in the drill. He was like lapping them. And I actually, when I saw that, I went and I reached out to some people in the building about it. And that was exactly the case. And Brett Veach even kind of like confirmed it when he spoke to the media the other day. He was like, I mean, from the day he got in here, his athleticism was on full display. So I was just wondering, I mean, have you worked with anyone quite like him before? And who would you kind of compare him to, maybe NFL comparisons or whatnot?
Great question. So we work with a lot of gifted athletes. Now, the majority, so personally, we've tested Tershawn. We did kind of a mini combine for him. I think this was in either March or April before the draft. So he could send it to his representation, and his representation could send it throughout the league. I want to say I posted the numbers, but I'm pretty sure it was a 35 inch vertical, and that's a flat footed vertical with, you know, 32 reps on the bench press. If you look at his stature, his height, his weight, now we don't have a laser 40 yard dash timer. But he went and worked out for a couple months at a place in Memphis. I believe it was Memphis. And he worked out, and they were doing testing there. And he was telling us that he was running in the 4.7s on the laser timer. So he chose not one to really make up any numbers about himself. But it's funny because as explosive as he is now, he was a little bit more explosive when he was 255 pounds. He had a 38-inch vertical and an over 40-inch vertical if you give him a couple steps to get some momentum. So the guy is just is an athletic freak. Now, personally, we haven't ever worked with anybody that explosive at that size. And that's why we've told people for years, you know, this kid's special. The explosiveness, the size, a little background on us being in Columbia. We've been fortunate enough over the past 5 or 6 years to work with several either current Mizzou football players or helping them prepare for pro days or combines. None of even the athletes that we work with at that level, the D1 level, getting ready to enter the combine or into draft, were really remotely close to the athlete that Sean is at his size. So it's and that's why I've kind of been on the bandwagon, and I feel like I helped open your eyes, like you mentioned, to where he's just a special kind of athlete that doesn't come around very often. So that's why I was fairly confident. I was 99% sure he was going to make practice squad. But with the news about Pinnell coming out, it was almost a no-brainer in my mind that he was going to make the 50% roster, just because as a coach, once you see that type of athleticism, you don't let it go. You don't take the chance of anybody else picking it up. So you asked about a comparison. I mean, it's really, I'm not saying he's the type of player that this man is yet, but if you look at Aaron Donald's stats, his size, his speed, his bench press, his vertical, almost identical to Tershawn from a combine perspective. Now, on the field, we'll see if that translates, but athleticism, he's just about equal to Aaron Donald, if not better in some categories.
See, and you know, I would compare it to Aaron Donald a bit too, just looking at everything on paper. But then, you know, I got someone in the Chiefs building saying, hey, this guy looks kind of like John Randall, who's a Hall of Famer. And I'm like, whoa, that's a little bit much. But, I mean, if that's what they're thinking, I mean, they got to be really impressed with this kid.
Yeah, and if you look at John Randall's size, he's about 6'1", 285, I think, is what he was at. And that's the exact same size and weight that they list Aaron Donald at, which is about the exact same size that they're going to list Tershawn at. So physically, like stature-wise, yeah, John Randall and Aaron Donald is a very fair comparison.
Now, another thing that was recently said about Turk, Steve Spagnuolo the other day during his press conference, he comes out and says, for a guy that has not been in the NFL very long, he sure operates like a true pro. Now, you said that of Tershawn and also of Mike Dana. But is that something you'd expect to hear about him after working with him the past couple of years?
Oh, absolutely. Tershawn is, so with our higher level guys, we most days do two workouts a day. Very rarely is Tershawn ever going to miss a workout. And if he does, it's something because something came up. He's a pro in every sense of the word. I mean, you don't really, it's hard to go throughout college because I'm sure you've heard when he graduated high school, he was only about 195 pounds. Now his first year at school, I think he put on 30 or 40 pounds, but, you don't really gain that much size and athleticism unless you go about things, you know, in a very diligent manner. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all with Tershawn. And I can personally speak from, because like I said, we train a lot of younger kids too, even in like, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh graders. Anytime that they were in there, they all knew turf. So Tershawn would make it a point to where he would walk over to them and, you know, ask them how their season's going. You know, I mean, I think you even probably saw in one of the video clips that I posted, he pulled on a kid on the sled. So, I mean, he's not just on the field on his work ethic, but dealing with people. I'm so excited for the Chiefs Kingdom to get to know him because he's a special kid in a lot of sense of the word.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have one more thing to mention because there are some people out there in Chiefs Kingdom that are still doubting Turk. All right. They're saying that as soon as Pennell gets back from his suspension, that Turk's going to be cut. Go back to the practice squad, whatever. I just want to know, what would you have to say to those doubters that don't think he has the ability to stick around with this team?
You know, it's kind of the same thing that I've said all along and kind of what got you on the train is, you know, as a man of his size, you don't find the tools that he has very often. And honestly, I think the more people that doubt him, the more it gives fuel to his fire. So, not that he needs any more motivation, but I mean, I just say to those people, you know, as Chiefs fans, I think you've got to love the story and you've got to cheer for the kid and root for him because he's a local kid. He's from St. Louis. He's lived in Columbia the past few years and he made the roster. I'd say it's understandable that for them to doubt him, being an undrafted guy, but, I don't know. As a diehard Chiefs fan, I've got total trust in Brett Veach. I mean, he's done a pretty good job over the past few years, in my opinion, at least. And for him to bring Tershawn in, and I don't know if you've seen, we talked about it on Twitter, the kind of grin that Brett Veach had on his face when he was getting asked specifically about Turk, I think that says a lot, too. And he almost even said with his grin, you know, you guys just don't even know what kind of player this kid is yet. That it's kind of funny that they were asking that question of him. But I feel like a lot of those eyes will be opened up tomorrow because I feel like he will get a lot of playing time tomorrow, a lot more than people expect, especially with only four defensive tackles.
Absolutely. I think you're right on the right track there, especially about tomorrow's game. I have this sneaking suspicion that we're going to see a lot of Turk Wharton, especially in some of those passing situations. Line him up right next to Chris Jones with the Shark and possibly Tano Passanio on the outside there. I think it's just going to be really tough for some offenses to stop.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. That NASCAR package looks good, and it's going to be a whole lot faster when Turk's out there. I can promise Chiefs fans that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Brett. We appreciate your insight. And we look forward to maybe having you on again here later in the season when Turk is tearing things up.
Absolutely, Charles. Anytime, man. I really appreciate you having me on and getting to talk about Turk a little bit. And like I said a couple times, I'm really excited for the Chiefs Kingdom to get to know him.
My next guest has, in my opinion, one of the greatest minds when it comes to football. He's a Texans Wire managing editor, Mr. Mark Lane. Mark, how's it going, man? It's been a while.
Ed, good to be on with you. It's You know, been a long time, it feels like, since we were at the Combine in Indianapolis, and I just can't believe how much the world has changed since then. And then here's what's funny about it. Of everything that's gone on, is the year's almost over. Where did it go? I guess it went with all the pandemic and murder hornets and, you know, everything that's going on. So anyway, it's good to be on with you.
Okay, Mark, are the Texans in a better position offensively without DeAndre Hopkins?
You know, I don't know. I think that what they've done is gone ahead and decided to try to put as many resources around Deshaun Watson to allow him to decipher where the ball should go. So you've got this core of shifty, speedy receivers in Kenny Stills, Will Fuller, Randall Cobb, and Brandon Cooks that can certainly torture defenses in terms of their speed. I mean, you know, Tyrann Mathieu referred to them as they could wreck a football game. And that's what they can do. So, I mean, you have those guys that he can try to figure out where the ball goes and read defenses. Then you have running backs such as David Johnson and Duke Johnson that have similar skill sets. So, when they're both in the game or one subbing out the other, it's still the same game plan. It's not like, oh, well, get ready for the dump off screen, you know, to this particular back, or get ready for them to run it down your throat. Then you have the tight ends with Jordan Akins, who provides an athletic option down the seams. Then Darren Fells, who scored a touchdown in the divisional playoff game on when they ran Big Mac Smash. That's one of Watson's favorite plays, but he provides a reliable red zone threat. And then the offensive line. I think this is the biggest component no one's talking about, and it gets missed because, you know, if you're someone that has to cover all 32 teams, for example, and you know, you got to go with, you know, you got to go with plays that'll get you yards, so to speak. So what'll get you, you know, long enough copy to meet deadline or sound bites that, you know, you can move on and talk about the New England Patriots or the Green Bay Packers? Well, you just pick on Bill O'Brien. Oh, Bill O'Brien, he traded DeAndre Hopkins. I can't believe it. How dumb. And now they have David Johnson. Doesn't he know that running backs don't matter in the NFL? So here, that's what I'm saying. That type of analysis gets in the way of consequential analysis like this. The Houston Texans are returning the same five offensive linemen as starters for the first time since 2011. That's continuity. That's the line. That's the one element that everybody was talking about where they said, well, if Deshaun Watson only had a line, why, you know, the Texans would really be a contender for... Well, there it is. There's the offensive line. And Laremy Tunsil got his first Pro Bowl last year of his career coming over to Houston. You have Titus Howard, who, let's just be honest, he's gone ahead and won the... the battle between him and Andre Dillard. He's obviously the best first round draft pick of that bunch. And then you have Nick Martin, who's in the center, reliable guy. Max Sharping, who's developing in year two, he's another reliable guy, provides flexibility along with Zach Fulton. So that's what I'm saying is, when you look at the offense, all what has happened is they're taking a gamble of let's give Watson a variety of targets. Maybe, you know, it's like this is what it's really like, Ed. It's like on Christmas morning. Do you want Santa Claus to bring you that expensive $300 gift that you've been pining for all December long? Or would you rather have about 30 gifts under the tree that cost 10 bucks each? That's kind of which one's going to produce the most joy? That's kind of what the Texans have done. And, you know, it's up to Deshaun Watson to open up those gifts.
How much pressure is on Bill O'Brien this season?
I mean, with the fans every year, with the organization, I think that they've invested in the O'Brien way. They made him general manager. They're just letting him have control of the personnel. You got Jack Easterby, the executive vice president of football operations, in there, and they're just letting O'Brien have his way. And I think that this will be the year. This is kind of like a honeymoon year. The first year was proving that, you know, he kind of knew what he was doing. And technically, they did improve compared to previous years because they won a playoff game. And they fixed the offensive line and so forth. Now, if all they do is win a playoff game and they get bounced out in the divisional, you know, you're still kind of where you are. And maybe you get a pass because of the pandemic. But if Houston regresses, if they don't make the playoffs, if they lose in the first round, then it's really going to start to look like the O'Brien way doesn't work. And then the pressure is on. I don't think O'Brien is really under any pressure within the organization this year.
Do you believe Deshaun Watson considers Patrick Mahomes a rival?
Man, I don't know anymore with the NFL. Looks like the only rivalry in pro football these days is NFL versus NFLPA. You know, in the old days, that's how Manning Brady, for example. I mean, that seemed like one of, you know, a rivalry. But I mean, these guys hang out so much outside of football and you know, talk to each other on social media. There's none of that palpable antipathy for the other guy that there used to be. And so it really doesn't seem like a rivalry at all. It just seems like, to be honest with you, like you got two great musicians on stage together. That's what it feels like when Watson and Mahomes take each other on. It doesn't really feel so much like a rivalry as more like a one big collab. And with the line set at 53.5, according to BetMGM, you know, some are hoping that Watson and Mahomes go over on their collab.
Do you believe J.J. Watt is still an elite pass rusher?
Yes. No, really, I do. I think that he is still an elite pass rusher because look, he only played in 8 games, right? But in those 8 games, what he was able to do was pretty remarkable, albeit he didn't exactly have the customary double-digit sack numbers that he normally would in a situation like that. But when you look at quarterback hits, this kind of tells the story to me. When you look at his quarterback hits and what he was able to do, you know, even with the torn pectoral, which occurred in week 8 against the Oakland Raiders, he still tallied 20 quarterback hits through 8 games. Now, there's no one on the list that even has double-digit quarterback hits with fewer than 10 games played. I mean, to find that, you kind of got to go down to Jonathan Bullard or Stephen Tuitt with the Steelers. I mean, those are the guys you start talking about when you say, well, what kind of production did they have just playing single-digit games? I mean, and they only had 7, each of those guys. But here's J.J. Watt, and he's only playing in 8 games, and he posts 20 quarterback hits. I mean, that's the same as Chris Jones had last year in 13 games for the Chiefs. So I still think he's elite, and with the pectoral injury, it's not like Is anything structural, you know, in terms of, you know, like the tibial plateau fracture, herniated disc? It's not really anything that takes you out of the action going forward in your career. It's just something that ends that season. I mean, Whitney Mercilus, for example, he tore his pectoral muscle week 5 of 2017. As a matter of fact, it was in the same game on a Sunday night against the Kansas City Chiefs that Watt broke his tibial plateau in his left knee. But anyway, in that game, Mercilus goes out. He comes back. He's played 16 games the past two seasons. So a pectoral injury like that doesn't really cripple guys going forward like some other injuries. So I still consider him to be an elite pass rusher. Now, let me say this. If he plays double-digit games this season, and you know he's only got about 6 sacks or something, then we got to start talking about whether or not he is still elite. But right now, benefit of the doubt, looking back at what he did in 8 games when he tallied 21 quarterback hits, you know, I got to still consider him elite.
What does the Texans defense need to do to slow down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense?
Get after him. Get after him. Look at Charles O'Minihue last season. He had that sack fumble that didn't that look like a former Big 12 football, by the way? You know, Texas's O'Minihue getting after Texas Tech's Mahomes. But anyway, that's what you have to do is you have to pressure Mahomes and not give up the chunk plays. Don't give up the chunk plays. Force the Chiefs to drive the length of the football field, to do it honestly, and hope that they make a mistake or settle for 3. That's really what the Texans have to do, and I think that they can do it. Of course, it's going to take a little bit of help from the offense, because in the Week 6 matchup, on October the 13th, 2019, they had over 40 minutes of time of possession, Houston did, and that was one of the components that sped up the game, that tilted, not really tilted the field, but it just put a lot of pressure on Kansas City's reality when it came to the tempo of the game. And so they had to speed things up, play with a little more anxiety, and that was what helped Houston win. I mean, look at it. Houston goes into Arrowhead Stadium, scores 31 points both times. What's the difference? The difference is time of possession, being able to get after Mahomes. I mean, it's what worked in Week 6 can still work in Week 1. Regardless of what happened in the AFC divisional playoffs. Yes, that's true. That in the Spagnuolo's defense, they were still gelling or whatever. I get it. That's true. But in terms of being able to shut down Mahomes in the offense, they have already proven how they can do that. And now it's just a matter of execution.
Mark, as always, thank you for your time. Take care and enjoy the game.
All right, Ed, I really appreciate you having me on, and I hope you're doing well and stay safe, and let's see what happens. Football's back, baby!
For everyone at Chiefs Wire, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Make sure to follow us on social media @ Chiefs Wire for more information. I'm Ed Easton Jr. Check us out next time.